This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, girl.
You are now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge, and here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Andrew Flanagan, and Chad Campbell.
I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill the bathtub full of sweat.
Right. Well, folks, welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lab. It's our fourth volume. We have your standard cast of characters here in the lounge this evening. A couple cigars just got lit up. We're just digging in, getting relaxed, getting ready to bring you the hard-hitting analysis that you've come to get used to here on the Sports Lounge, part of the Place to Be Nation family. If you don't check out any of the other podcasts, you should, because they're all fantastic. But we like to think that here at the Sports Lounge, we are the gold standard here at the Place to Be Nation, particularly in the sports section. So joining me tonight in the lounge have Keith Schmidt, Jeff Machado, Andy Flanagan, and Chad Campbell, coming from the Dirty South. How's everyone doing?
Fantastic. Little bummed out about the U.S., but...
Hey.
I'm bummed out about the U.S., Roger, and I'm also bummed out that you schooled me on the basketball court not 1 hour ago.
Hey. Yeah. Well, the Cowboys got to do what the Cowboys got to do, guys. You know? Sorry,
test
Jeff.
Test the atmosphere here in the lounge tonight.
You know, you...
Some bad feelings.
It's true. You come on to my frontier. You want a duel. You know, I'm going to draw first, and I'm going to draw fastest. It's just the way it goes.
Expert with the cowboy metaphor.
How's it going, Chad?
Good. Unfortunately, I don't get to compete in the historic basketball games that I've heard a lot about. I actually seen stats on, which is a sad state of affairs. But,
That's you and me both. They say I'm too short to play.
Yeah.
You know, we accept all kinds out on that basketball court.
It's a judge-free league.
Exactly. Chad, sure. if you're ever out there, the Cowboy can take you to school, too. It's no problem.
Yeah, just take a quick drive up to Rhode Island.
So, good banter here, and we have a jam-packed show for you tonight. We're gonna talk about the World Cup, particularly we're taping this on Tuesday at about 8:40 Eastern time, so about 2 hours out from the U.S.'s heartbreaking yet very exciting loss to Belgium. Yay. We're going to look at the NBA draft a little bit, kind of a recap of the NBA draft, and also a look at free agency, as this is the first day of NBA free agency. And we're going to look at UFC 175. Chad and I are going to give you a preview there. And anyone else, of course, you know, the lounge is always speak your mind in the lounge, of course. And finally, we're going to continue our look through the major leagues of baseball. And we're going to take an in-depth look at the NL Central. So hope everybody's ready. You guys ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Cool. We're going to start things off with our soccer expert, Jeff Machado. Heartbreaking day today, Jeff. I mean, it's so close. The goalie stood on his head. It seemed like all the makings were there for the miracle upset, and it just didn't happen. Want to get your thoughts while the wound is still fresh, so just let us have it. What do you think?
Well, if you had told me, you know what, Jeff, the United States is going to get out of the group of death, and they're going to match up against Belgium in round one and lose, I would say, you know what, that's a great World Cup. But before the game started, just the way the group play had gone, you know, Belgium didn't really look great, even though they have so many superstars on their team. And the United States just hanging with Portugal and beating Ghana and looking okay against Germany, ended up losing, but they didn't really play their best game. You figured a lot of people were picking, including me, thought, you know what, they have a chance they could beat Belgium in this game. And then you're talking about a quarterfinal against Argentina. You know, if they go into that game and something amazing happens, this is just a quantum leap forward for U.S. And, you know, I didn't watch the game. I had my friends texting me throughout the day. And from what I gather, it kind of went according to plan where, you know,
we did watch the game, Jeff, and sorry, you're breaking up us.
What happened out there?
breaking up on us a little there, but, you know, watching the game, I had the pleasure of watching it over with Andy tonight, and it looked a lot like the Ghana game in that the U.S. seemed to be getting just completely outclassed through the game. The goalie just getting peppered and standing on his head. And, you know, I think on a lot of days this game might have been 4-1 or 5-1 or something like that. But what do you have to say about that goalie's performance? I mean, it was incredible to me.
Yeah, Tim. That's what really hurts about it. It felt like, you know, you get this kind of like out-of-body experience from Tim Howard, and that could be the game that you don't deserve to win, but you pull it out anyway. Which would have been a really great moment, and, you know, I'm not huge into soccer, but I was into that game, and that really hurt when they had the chance to take the lead at the end and just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, if you're talking about an 18-save performance, that is one of the all-time great World Cup performances, and it ends up in a loss. It's very disappointing. But, you know, Belgium, the classier team, they had the ball for the whole game. Again, my one thing with the United States as to their biggest weakness is the wings. They have no good forward-playing wingbacks. They have no good midfielders that can stretch the field side to side. I mean, Graham Zuzi he's good at set pieces, but he's just not very good in that kind of capacity. Beasley looks old, looks terrible. He's getting beat on that Ronaldo goal. And that's basically the entire thing. They were just playing defense and waiting to get Dempsey over the top. Altidor didn't get into the game. That injury was just devastating. And having picked them to not even come out of the World Cup started, I was really hoping that they could get through the first round against Belgium. That didn't really look good, but, you know, it happens. It was an exciting game. Howard, legendary performance, and they're going home, and that's it.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before on here. What an accomplishment it was just to come out of that group. And I can tell just as a, you know, as a sports fan in general, and as someone who's constantly talking sports with other people, the excitement for this particular game was higher than any soccer game that I can remember. I mean, I had people coming in early to work just so they could get out in time to watch the game. It was, I mean, you know, us being from Boston, it had the same feeling as a Celtics finals game or a, you know, Red Sox in the playoffs type of game. Just, you know, that seems like the whole country really got behind this team. And I think there was that feeling that you're mentioning, Jeff, that maybe they could do this. Maybe against the odds, they had a chance here to do something special. But overall, I think that the World Cup, even given the loss, the fact that they got out of the group, and the fact that Howard had such an iconic performance in a game that everybody was watching, I think this World Cup team did a lot for soccer in the United States. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I like you said, Roger, we had people at work that left early. I was actually one of them. And we went to a sports bar in Atlanta and watched the game, and it was very festive. It felt like a playoff game for one of the local teams. So, I mean, it seemed like it's been gaining a lot of traction, and people were actually pretty knowledgeable of the players. When Wondolowski subbed in that game, there was actually kind of a buzz that people actually recognized who he was. He just wasn't kind of a faceless number coming into the game.
Agreed. So, you know, hopefully we'll see what the ratings are now. I guess that's really the true test, is now that the U.S. are out, I'm sure the ratings are going to drop. But, I mean, I for one, am still very interested in this World Cup. And, I mean, I think that, you know, the way Belgium played, I mean, I think they can give Argentina a run for their money. What do you think, Jeff?
I think Argentina's going to handle them pretty well. I mean, Argentina, they haven't looked their best over the past few games of the World Cup as they had, like, leading up and, like, the qualifying. But I don't know. I think, you know, Belgium is really hurting on their back line. that's what I was so frustrated about this U.S. performance is that I feel like they could have gotten more chances. I mean, the chances were just so lopsided, but they just couldn't form any attacks. They were just, you know, sitting back the entire time waiting for Tim Howard to save the day, as usual. But, yeah, I
most
don't
of the,
like
most of the night he did.
So, Jeff, yep. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
That's all right. I have a question for Jeff. Did you get to watch much of it? Because I kind of got the feeling that the U.S. looked tired, but I wasn't sure if that's something that I'm reading into it or if other, you know, someone who actually knows about soccer could see that.
Well, I didn't watch much of it. I listened to it on the radio, and from what the commentators were saying, I wouldn't say so much that they were tired, but they were just kind of content to sit back and try to get a counterattack opportunity because they just knew that Belgium was maybe going to make some mistakes up front, and they are so hurting in the back line. Like, Kompany was playing, but he wasn't, like, at his top form, and they have several of their starting defenders were either hurt or were playing hurt. So I think that was Klinsmann's strategy. I mean, he sat Kyle Beckerman, who I think has played pretty well. I mean, he's running around. He's in his early 30s, kind of an older player, but he made the team, and he had started the first three games. And I think that he was controlling the back of the midfield pretty well, and he sits him down, and he brings Cameron back in the game. I think that he was planning on Belgium putting a lot of balls into the box, and Cameron's taller, and he wanted guys to, like, stop that. Like, maybe we can get a goal later. Maybe we can even take it to PKs. I don't know. I just feel like what I was listening to, it was kind of a defeatist attitude where they were just going to sit back and try to defend. And they did a good job until, you know, the very end of the game.
Yeah, it almost worked, right?
I watched both of the games today, and you're right. Belgium did dominate the first 90 minutes, and mm-hmm. then the first minute and a half of extra time. And it was when Lukaku came in for Belgium when they scored. And right after that second goal, it was like a switch went off, and the U.S. went ballistic. Had they played like that from the giddy up, they would have beat Belgium. I think they really would have. Fabian Johnson went down. He got hurt. That kind of hurt a little. That's when Cameron came in, and I don't know. They get the kid, Julian Green. He comes in. First time he touches the ball, he scores. That was pretty cool. A 19-year-old kid scoring a goal, and they put up a great fight in extra time. Great fight. They dominated the extra time.
Excellent.
I mean, Wondolowski, he got in. He had a wide open net. He missed it. It was. The point is, he needs finishers. He needs world class players that are just going to go in there and play with the big boys.
Yeah, they have the heart and the will and the competitiveness, but I don't think they have the technical skill yet. I think that's what it is. They're lacking the superstar. The Messis and the Ronaldos. They don't have one of those guys.
We've certainly talked about that, but I think we can all agree, big step forward for American soccer. Jeff, I'm real interested in your view on the quarterfinals. Having being a bit of a novice, but having watched most, if not all, of the games so far, I think the France-Germany game and the Brazil-Colombia game are both mm-hmm. very, very interesting. And then just my own personal opinion just from watching, would you say that the Netherlands and Costa Rica are more of the kind of dark horses, like either one of them would be a pretty significant underdog to Argentina? And do you think Colombia has a chance? I mean, watching them, I think they've looked great. But, I mean, Brazil, it's Brazil. It's in Brazil. So how do you feel about the other quarters?
Well, the Netherlands, I watched the Netherlands-Mexico game. And I had said on the last broadcast that I picked Mexico as a dark horse to get pretty far into this tournament. And I think they got hosed big time. I mean, that game made me want to vomit. And I'm not even from Mexico. I have no ties to Mexico. I don't care about Mexico. But, man, talk about a screw job. Like, this is what I'm trying to tell people to watch soccer. And a team outplays a team for the entire match. And the best player in the whole tournament is the goalie for this one team, Mexico. Memo Ochoa plays amazing. Just, like, not letting them do anything that they want to do. And what happened? One lucky goal, and then a down in the penalty box, and then the game lose.
So, you know what? Screw the Netherlands. I think the Netherlands suck. And I think Costa Rica, Costa Rica played 30-plus minutes with 10 men, and they won the game. Yeah, they need to go to penalty kicks, but fine. You know what? These guys are just, they have so many players where they're playing as a team, and I'm looking at Costa Rica and Colombia as two teams that are the best soccer teams right now in the tournament. And I think Costa Rica is going to take down the Netherlands. When we're talking about Brazil and Colombia, that's kind of tough because obviously I guaranteed Brazil to win. And Colombia looks so good. I mean, James Rodriguez, a.k.a. James Rodriguez, I don't know how you want to pronounce that, but, you know, we're in America, I can say James, I think.
America.
He's just so sick. And Brazil, the thing about them is that they're wearing white shorts. I don't know if you guys know this about me, but I am a big uniform guy. Brazil has, like, one of the best kits in the world. They have, you know, the yellow tops with the green trim and blue shorts, and all of a sudden they're bringing in white shorts to their own tournament. So if they lose, then I absolve myself from any blame, because that would be the entire reason.
Yeah, no one could have predicted the white shorts.
Yeah.
Host team, host color, right? The white.
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, maybe it's just an arrogant thing. Like, you know, we're going to win anyway, so why not break out the white shorts?
Yeah, I originally had Brazil, Germany, Ivory Coast, Argentina. Ivory Coast, obviously, they got totally screwed by Greece. Some stupid nonsense in the penalty box at the end of that game, too. Greece played terrible in the group stage. And this is the thing about the World Cup. Every World Cup, there's at least one team that plays terrible in the group stage, and they somehow backdoor their way into the round 16. And it makes
USA. Come on.
They beat Ghana. Ghana's a great team. USA, that's not the case. We're talking about Greece. Greece sucked. They lost. They deserved it. But, yeah, Germany-France is now making me kind of waver. I think I'm going to pick France over Germany. For the first time in my bracket, I'm going to change my opinion because France looks so good with just defense to midfield to forwards. Benzema looks like the best player in the tournament. Paul Pogba can't be stopped. I like France to beat Germany. I like Costa Rica to beat the Netherlands, Argentina over Belgium, and I'm sticking with Brazil because you know what? They're in Brazil. They'll fix the game, for God's sake. But that Brazil-Colombia game is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's not actually fixed.
No,
all this goodwill for soccer is in the toilet if the game's actually fixed.
Yeah, that sport's doing
really poorly. The deeper it goes, the more at risk the referees are when Brazil's on the field.
It's very dangerous to be a referee right now, that's for sure.
Yes, especially when Brazil's playing.
So our other experts here, I mean, do you guys have a prediction? I can start with my own. I would say I also like France, given what I've seen. I like Argentina. I think the Netherlands will beat Costa Rica, and I really like what I've seen from Colombia, so I'm going to pick Colombia to beat Brazil.
Colombia, Netherlands.
No,
ballsy, my friend.
the cowboy, that's how we are. You know, not afraid to take that risk.
By definition, the cowboy is ballsy.
Right.
Well, I'll go with Brazil, Germany, Argentina, and Costa Rica in the final four.
Here we go.
With Argentina and Brazil meeting up, and Brazil winning on a bad call.
Wow. So it's taking your predictions to heart there, Jeff, because that's how you think it's going.
I'll tell you what, I watched Messi play today, and I'm not really a big soccer guy, but World Cup, Olympics, I watch it, and he looks like Chris Paul with his feet. It's unbelievable the things that guy can do. That guy's amazing. They're going to crush Belgium.
If I didn't think Brazil had such a great matchup against Argentina, I would love to see Argentina win because I think that Lionel Messi is the best soccer player I've ever seen.
Yes, I agree.
He needs a World Cup to solidify his place in the top three along with Pelé and Diego Maradona. And you know what? I hope he does it. I just don't think he will.
Yeah. The announcers were saying that a few times today about he needs to justify being the best player for to compare to that guy. What'd you call him?
Maradona. Maradona. He's the best. That's the best player in Argentina's history. Right. Right?
Well, Messi's going to give him a run for his money.
So what do you got, Andy, Chad, predictions?
I will say I think Brazil, but it's going to be tough, and I think a lot depends on how healthy Neymar is. And then Germany, I'm going to go with the Netherlands over Costa Rica. I thought Costa Rica looked really gassed at the end of their game. And I think even though Costa Rica has a guy named Campbell that I want to cheer for badly, I think the Netherlands with Robin and Van Parisi will be too much. And then Argentina, I guess I'm going with them. I do get a sense, I watched their game today too, and it does a lot of times feel like Messi and everybody else out there on the pitch, as they like to say. But I think they'll be able to take over Belgium.
Lone Ranger, you're last.
All right. I like Costa Rica. It just, based on the story at this point, I don't have a lot of analysis to back that up. I think Brazil, the home field, is enough to get them past Colombia. And I like France and, you know, the other two.
Excellent. All right. So we're all on the record now, which will make this which is going to make this pretty interesting going forward. And if Colombia happens to win that game, I'm going to be pretty cocky on next week's podcast. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you that much. And then, you know, before we move on to something else, I just wanted to hit on Uruguay's biter, Suarez. So again, for the listeners and for us here who are not all that familiar with soccer, I probably, you know, done a little digging on this guy and found out he is probably one of the top five players in the world, right? And then I hear on the radio is that he's John Henry, the owner of the Red Sox. He's the highest paid athlete under him, which means he's making some good money. But he can't stop sinking his teeth into his opponents. So he's number three or number four, and got suspended for 4 months, and I heard his coach say he thought it was excessive, which is the most friggin' ridiculous thing I've ever heard. So, Jeff, could you? We've talked about this a little bit, so I have an idea of what your take is. But could you share it with the listeners and just give us a breakdown of the biter?
Well, Roger, if you remember the last broadcast, what I said during my little piece about trying to sell the listeners on watching more soccer, watch Uruguay and watch Luis Suarez play football, because he's amazing. He just breaks down the defense, and he does moves that are like only take place in video games, and he's like the best player, striker in the world, and he's one of the top three players in the world, and it's just like, but this guy had been suspended twice before in his career for biting somebody. And he goes and he plays in the World Cup game after he just scored two goals against England. After months and months, after being suspended, after playing in England and being criticized by the English press and tabloids for being this monster guy who bit somebody, and he's crying his eyes out on the sidelines. And he just beat England in the World Cup for his country. And he said to all those people that criticized me, there you go. And he walks away. And I'm like, wow, what a great moment for Luis Suarez. He's so great. He's back. And the least likely thing that I could have possibly imagined would happen in the next game is that he would bump somebody again. I would think it would be more likely for my mother to cancel her vacation. She just went to Vermont. If she canceled her vacation and flew to Brazil and she ran out on the field and bit somebody, I thought that would be more likely for it, actually biting somebody again in a World Cup game. It is incredible. Like, the guy is insane. It doesn't make any sense. And I was reading about it, and the psychologist that analyzed him after the second biting incident was like, this guy needs psychological help. He's going to bite somebody again. It's just something in his head that makes him bite somebody. And this psychologist was right, and we need to find him, and he needs to solve all our social problems.
Yeah, because that's definitely true.
Like, yeah. And then, so then the next thing, Luis, this is the greatest thing about it, okay? I was so fascinated that it even happened. And he says, I didn't bite him. I just stumbled. Yes. It looks like I bit him.
And then, and it resulted
I love that he's sticking to it. It's amazing.
Like a bite.
No, but then he came out today, and he said, after being with my family for a couple days, there was a situation where the player was bit by me making a biting motion. He wouldn't even say I bit him, but he admitted it. And he said, I'm sorry. And it's incredible Because imagine, like, after consultation with his family, like, what was it like when he went home to his family? They were probably like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're making us look stupid. You're one of the best soccer players in the world, and everyone just keeps saying, oh, yeah, you're the biter's wife, or you're the biter's brother.
Do you think they had an intervention waiting for him when he got home?
It was an intervention at the Luis Suarez house. And I wish I was there to see it, because I bet they're all just like, you apologize, and you say it is never going to happen again. And you better hope to, and pray that you get one more chance on a global stage to have a great game or to be in a World Cup and do something good for Uruguay or for Liverpool or whoever, because this is fucking ridiculous. I'm not going to go down as somebody who's related to the fucking biter.
So, Jeff, that's fair. That's exactly what I was looking for. That's fantastic. You have a great way with words. So I have two more questions around Suarez. One, do they beat Colombia with him? Two, do you think the punishment was severe enough?
I think the punishment was overly severe just to see what he would. I think they'll probably cut it down a little bit now that Uruguay's out anyway. And, oh man, that's what sucks, because I don't know. I mean, with him on the team, anything can happen, and Colombia looks great. That is what is so angering, is that he deprived the world of this matchup. It's not fair. And there's nothing you can do about it. I would pick probably, Colombia, Uruguay with Suarez. I'd probably still pick Colombia, but I wouldn't be surprised if they won. I mean, like I said, I'm like that team, Uruguay can go all the way to the final because that guy is that good. And it's just, forget it. It's over. It doesn't matter anymore.
I mean, this is really like the equivalent of Michael Phelps swimming over into the other lane and biting someone during the Olympics and then getting kicked out of the Olympics.
Yes, it's that.
If
it
he
is
had
that.
Done it twice before already.
Uruguay is a two-time World Cup champion team, and like you said, top five, I'd put him number three. I'd go Messi, Ronaldo, Suarez. That's my top three. It's unbelievable.
All right. Does anyone else have any final thoughts here on the World Cup? Before we head to break, I know my cigar just went out. I need to relight that. I need to maybe take a quick trip to the stage. Andy, I know you'll join me. So, any final thoughts?
I may be making a biting motion next time we play basketball, so watch out for that.
All right, very good. Everyone, stay tuned. Please listen to our information here. We have a bunch of other great podcasts here at Place to Be Nation, and you'll hear that. And we'll be back shortly at the Sports Lounge.
Tim Howard just made a little save.
Save Howard!
Stack them up against the gate. The homies trying to catch me, but they can't wait. The street lights just came on.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you've got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to eat it.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed those messages. So next up, we're going to discuss UFC 175, which is coming up this Saturday and is headlined by a very, very, very interesting middleweight title fight between Chris the All-American Weidman and Lyoto the Dragon Machida. I've been saying it for a couple weeks now, but if you're not a huge MMA guy, not a big UFC fan, buy this card because this is going to be one of the most interesting fights of the year. Weidman coming off two consecutive victories over previously godlike Anderson Silva, and Machida, who is a former light heavyweight champion, always a difficult guy to fight, has dropped down to middleweight and looks like an absolute world beater. Top of the line fight, very interesting matchup. So, Chad, how do you see this one going?
Oh yeah, so this is I would say the two types of fight in MMA that interest me the most are when you have a real good blood feud, and then when you have a fight that stylistically it just looks like they'll match each other, and this falls into the latter category. With Machida, with his style, which is really unlike anybody else in the UFC, his kind of quasi-karate, I mean his style is basically Machida, like he's invented his own style. Weidman, we know about his great wrestling that he can have, and then also, now he's starting to show some KO power with what he did to Anderson Silva, what he did previously with Mark Munoz. This looks like an absolute kind of war-type fight that you don't really know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, agreed. And I think one of the big key... I'm going to get the call out of the way. I've thought about it. I've gone back and forth with this one. And I like Machida. I'm gonna pick Machida.
Oh, man.
Couple of reasons. One, I think the five-round fight favors him. Because when he loses, sometimes it's kind of due to inactivity, where he'll have one round that he wins convincingly, and he's probably the guy who did the most damage in the fight, but you know, he has some rounds where he doesn't do much. I think the five-round fight favors him in that it gives him an extra two rounds to catch and hurt and stop Weidman. The other is his takedown defense. Machida is, for a stand-up guy, and a you know, a guy who prefers to keep the fight standing and a guy without a wrestling background, his takedown defense is awesome. And I don't think Weidman's going to be able to get him to the ground. And if this fight's on the feet, Weidman's got the KO power, but Machida's not going to stand in front of him and clown like Silva did. Machida's the toughest guy to hit in all of MMA. He's a maybe Mighty Mouse Johnson, but he's right up there with his in and out style. I think he stuffs the takedowns, he frustrates Weidman, and I think he takes him out late.
I agree that Machida is very tough on the feet because of the way he stands, his stance. But I'm actually, this is going to be a contrasting pick. I am going to go with Weidman. I do think he'll be able to push through and take Machida down and kind of grind out. I'm going to go a decision on this, kind of five round. I think it'll be close. I think Machida will win rounds. If I had to guess, probably the first and then maybe the fifth if he knows he's losing. But I do think Weidman will be able to take Machida down. It's not going to be easy. The crux for that is looking at the Phil Davis fight that Machida lost, but that wasn't light heavyweight. So now, I mean, him dropping down, I think, was very smart because it might be able to overtake John Jones, just didn't have the size or the strike. somebody like John Jones. So him dropping down to middleweight felt like a smart decision. But that's kind of what I'm basing the pick on. But I'm very nervous about that pick. I'm not very confident at all.
Yeah. I mean, Phil Davis is a huge, I mean, one of the best wrestlers in all the UFC.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, and a lot bigger than Machida. And Weidman, you know, Weidman's a very good wrestler. He's also, I like Weidman a lot. I think it might be a case of too much too soon for him in that, I mean, he's only got 11 fights, and Machida's just so seasoned. And, I mean, the Silva fights, I mean, he won those fights, but it's, you know, the first fight, Silva, I don't know what the hell he was doing.
It felt like a lucky punch in some way.
He tried to get in the kid's head by being just overly confident and overly cocky, and he got caught, right? He got caught with his hands down. The second fight, Weidman did the Chael Sonnen in the first round, right? Which is take Silva down and lay on top of him. And he inflicted some damage. But in the second round, they were standing where Silva would, you would think, would have the clear advantage. And he, you know, he freaking breaks his shin in half on the guy's leg. So I think Machida is just, he's too seasoned, and he has looked good at middleweight. I mean, he looks really, really good at middleweight. So, but I can certainly see the case for Weidman winning. Like you said, I mean, he could take him down, and he's no slouch on the feet. I mean, it's not like he's a shitty striker or anything.
Yeah, yeah. We're not talking about like Damian Maia as far as his striking game. I mean, he's competent, but certainly not at Machida's level.
Right. So, I mean, it's one of those fights. I think the key to the fight is can Weidman get the fight down consistently? If he can, he'll win. If he can't, I think it's a matter of time before Machida takes him out. I mean, this guy who like knocked out. I mean, is Weidman kind of a good comp for Weidman? I think it's a guy like Rashad Evans, great wrestler, good striker. Rashad Evans tried to stand with Machida and got his head knocked off.
Right.
So I think it's going to be real interesting.
Randy Couture as well. I mean, that was the end of Randy's run, but. But yeah, he decided he wanted to strike with Machida, and he got absolutely killed in that fight in Toronto.
Right, absolutely. So, like we said, guys, tune into this one. I'd say Chad and I, neither one of us are particularly confident in our pick. But if you're a fan of a good fight and just seeing the best in the world do what they do, then this is the fight for you. And also, as an added bonus, we have Ronda Rousey, who's the women's champion, who I'm sure everybody knows due to her arm bars and her shall we say, appearance. she's generally a headliner, and she's fighting in the co-main event against Alexis Davis. I'm going to go get Alexis Davis isn't a great challenger for her. That's one problem the UFC has right now with Rousey is that they don't have a lot of worthy challengers. I mean, there's about a 95% chance that our Rousey's going to rip this chick's arm off. I'm assuming you're going Rousey, Chad.
Yeah, first round submission, I think, is the safe bet. I mean, it's really tough for me to see a case where Alexis Davis really even survives the first round. I can't really see it.
Right. And, you know, for MMA fans, we know that there's really one fight out there for Rousey. There's really one challenge out there for her, and that's from a woman who's not in the UFC right now, but is a, you know, Cyborg Santos, Chris Cyborg. So yeah, she used to be married to Evangelista Santos. I don't know, they must have gotten into a heated argument sparring or something, and it ended the marriage.
I think I would take a Cyborg in a straight up fight, actually.
Right. Well, you know, he was Cyborg too.
I mean, Mrs. Cyborg, excuse me.
Females, yeah, I think I would too. But she is she fights at 145 pounds.
Right.
And she is an absolute destroyer. She does not share Rousey's marketability. because of, you know, she doesn't look like Rousey. We'll just be honest about it. She got busted for PEDs too, and I mean, she looks like someone who takes PEDs. Right. But she, you know, she had originally said that she physically couldn't make 135 pounds. That gave Dana White all the ammo he needed to keep her out of the UFC, because he doesn't believe in protecting fighters, but I think in this case that I think it's an exception. I think he doesn't want Rousey anywhere near Cyborg. I think Cyborg has come out now and said she can make 135 and she wants Rousey, and Dana White saying, "Well, you said if you came down to 135, it would kill you. So you're gonna have to prove it outside the UFC and then prove it in the UFC before we deem you worthy of facing Ronda." If she can boil down to 135, I think Cyborg beats her, and beats her easily. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would definitely favor Cyborg. Only thing would be whether Rousey could lock on the armbar. I guess the closest contemporary comparison for Rousey is Gina Carano, and Carano's fight with Cyborg was a great one-round affair. And Carano was able to hang a little bit with Cyborg, and she didn't have the dangerousness that Rousey has with the armbar. But Cyborg was still able to plow through Gina pretty easily. Unless they just want to have Rousey face this subpar competition or somebody really rises up the ranks, I can't see them not going with a Cyborg fight if she wants to do it.
Yeah.
It's certainly the most marketable fight. Even if they could get someone like Gina Carano back in the game and they want to do her versus Rousey, fine. But if that's off the table and the Cyborg fight's off the table, I think you're just going to be seeing these championship fights that feel like Rousey showcases.
Right, absolutely. You know, one couple of differences with Carano from Rousey. Carano was a Muay Thai champion.
Right.
So she had been, you know, she's a stand-up fighter. I believe she went to Thailand and was the first American to win the Muay Thai championship in Thailand. And, and Cyborg beat her standing. And, it was a good fight, but it's not, Cyborg wasn't, you know, Cyborg didn't just try to take her down and lay on top of her or anything. She stood there and fought her and beat her standing. And the other thing is Carano's naturally a lot bigger than Rousey. Like, Carano had a lot of issues making 145, never mind 135. So I think, you know, I think the threat of the armbar was there, but Rousey's only chance in that fight is one that that Cyborg is just so weight drained that she's just not herself, or two, that she gets old quick. Because I mean, we saw Rousey stand up with Sarah McMahon in the last fight, and she knocked her out with the knee. But I mean, Sarah McMahon's striking was so rudimentary, and Rousey's striking is very rudimentary, and just a bigger girl like that, I mean, I don't think she'll be able to hip toss Cyborg like she does all these other girls right into the armbar. But to your point, Chad, I mean, the UFC they don't protect people, which is a thing I love about the UFC, is that regardless of how marketable you are, you get thrown to the wolves regardless of style matchup. It's one of the things that's killing boxing, is that, you know, you have Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, the two best fighters, the two biggest draws. They fight in the same division, and they don't friggin' fight each other, you know?
Right.
And that doesn't happen in the UFC. So I think eventually Rousey Cyborg is going to get made. Until then, barring some type of, you know, anything can happen in MMA, but barring some type of a miracle or huge upset, Rousey is going to, you know, coast to 13-0, 14-0, and not that I don't think that's a bad thing for the sport. She's very marketable, and I mean, she's real likable, a lot of fun to watch. I mean, she's got a real mean streak in the ring that I really respect. I mean, and she plays the heel real well without, you know, not shaking Misha Tate's hand after beating her. I mean, she, you know, that I love all that stuff. So it's going to be an interesting fight.
If Davis wins, I would think that would be one of the biggest upsets I can think of in UFC championship history. I mean, we just saw TJ Dillashaw win the bantamweight title. That was a big upset. I always think back to Matt Serra beating GSP.
That's the one.
So those are kind of the two I would say right off the top of my head as contenders. But this would be, I would say, in the conversation with at least the Dillashaw one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then one other fight on the card that I think we should go over. It's a pretty interesting fight. You have Stefan Struve, who they're now listing at 7 feet tall. If you've never seen him fight, it's always
like Andre the Giant. He grows an inch.
It's a trip. It's a trip to watch him fight. And he's fighting a former football player, Matt Mitrione. Kind of a crossroads fight for both guys to try to stay relevant. Both guys have gotten the push, but Struve got knocked out by Mark Hunt. If you've never watched Mark Hunt, you have to. Everybody loves. You love Mark Hunt, Chad? I love Mark Hunt.
Yeah. I think you've got to.
He's good. One of those guys that, you know, you can hit him with a 2x4 and he just keeps coming, and then one shot and you're done. And then Mitrione, who looked real promising as a prospect, but lost 3 out of 4 fights. He lost to Congo, Roy Nelson, and Schaub. He's stepping up yet again to fight Struve. And you got to think if he, he's basically feasted on the shitty guys, and anytime he steps up at all, he gets beat. So you got to think if he loses decisively to Struve, he could be looking at the door realistically, because he's you only get so many chances. Looking at the fight, I'll let you give your prediction first, Chad, and give your breakdown of the fight before I tell you my thoughts.
So I will go with, you would think with as tall as Struve is, that he has such a high reach advantage that it would be very substantial. But then I think back to like him getting knocked out by Roy Nelson and stuff like that. So that kind of throws that by the wayside. Definitely think Mitch lose here. But I think they'll be standing and bang it out for this fight, and I got a favor Struve. I'll say a first round knockout, and that's probably it for old Mitrione.
All right, so we agree on the pick, not on the way it's going to happen. Mitrione always very susceptible to ground fighters, not a wrestling background. Struve is he's a fantastic submission guy with those limbs. I mean, his legs are taller than me, so I think he gets the fight to the ground early and takes out Mitrione with a triangle. That's my prediction. So we're in agreement on Rousey, we're in agreement on Struve, and we are in a disagreement on Machida and Weidman, but I think we could go either way there. So again, guys, tune into this one because it's going to be awesome. And while we're talking combat sports, we want to breach a topic we haven't talked about here on the Sports Lounge before, which is boxing. Which I'll admit I'm a boxing junkie. It's my first love, and I know the sport's screwed up, and I know there's corruption, and I know the best guys don't fight each other. But I've always said, and I'll still say it, that a great boxing match beats the shit out of any other type of fight. Any other, you put the best boxing match up against the best UFC fight and you're watching the boxing match every time. When you think of Gotti Ward or you think of Corrales Castillo, those are just incredible. And this past Saturday we had a matchup between undefeated Terrence Crawford and Euriorkis Gamboa for their 135-pound title. Crawford has gotten a big push from HBO. He beat Ricky Burns, a longtime champion. He was kind of on the downside, not the most impressive win, but he beat Ricky Burns for the title. And Euriorkis Gamboa kind of looks like a little Mike Tyson. I mean, just all the natural talent in the world. One of the greatest Cuban amateurs of all time. And he's had some promotional issues, and he's part of the Balco thing. So he's undefeated, but he seemed to kind of be on the downside. And these guys just put on a friggin' whale of a fight. Just definitely fight of the year so far. Your Gamboa was winning the first 3 or 4 rounds with his natural talent until Crawford, just speed, just in and out. This guy hits, it's just like lightning. Crawford started to time him, and then Crawford knocked him down a bunch of times, and Gamboa just, instead of holding on, he just came after the freaking guy, and just they were swinging at the same time, and whoever was going to drop, and Crawford ended up taking a taking it by knockout in the ninth round, and he had actually been almost out himself earlier in the ninth round. So just an awesome fight. And if you happen to have HBO Go or you get the opportunity, I'd strongly suggest watching it. And Chad, I know you caught the fight as well. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I'm definitely more of a novice boxing fan than Roger, but I was interested in this fight, and I'm always a little weary when you hear either HBO or Showtime kind of get behind somebody big, because I just started watching boxing more closely last year. In fact, and Adrian Broner was kind of the first guy that I kind of felt like had the big push machine, besides kind of your more everybody knows names like Floyd and Canelo and Pacquiao. And so we saw with Adrian Broner last year barely beating Pauly Malgiannini and then losing to Madonna. So I was a little weary of Crawford, and he came in, he had the big hometown crowd, and the first couple of rounds, like you said, he was at him losing probably actually four out of the five first rounds. And I thought he really showed a lot of poise, kind of keeping it together, starting to find his strikes. I know during the fight, Roy Jones was criticizing him for staying in the southpaw stance throughout the entire fight, but it really seemed to kind of work to his advantage the longer the fight went, and he was able to break through and end with a good victory in KO fashion, and it really felt like a star-making performance, and I'm really interested to see who they match him up with next.
Absolutely. I mean, I think they'll match him up. The champion in that division is a fighter named Miguel Vasquez, who is literally the most boring fighter in all of boxing. I mean, he's like watching paint dry. I mean, he wins, but it's just, I mean, he makes like old, like even like Mayweather from 5 years ago look like fucking Arturo Gatti. And so I don't think they'll match him with him, but there are a couple of other good options in that division. I think Omar Figueroa is in that division. He's kind of a face first type of guy. And so it's just stay tuned, because that was a star making performance for Crawford. And it's good to see when a guy gets a push, and a guy who had normally been winning by decision takes a fight against Gamboa. I mean, that was his first title defense, and Gamboa is the real deal. I mean, that was ballsy to take that fight and then just goes for it and knocks him out. It was awesome. A little bit of a segue, but next, not this coming Saturday the 5th, but the following Saturday the 12th, we have Canelo Alvarez versus Arislandi Lara on Showtime pay-per-view. And that's a big fight. Alvarez is a huge, huge star. So we will definitely be with you with a preview of that one. And we'll give you a Cowboys call in that one. And we're going to try to continue to follow boxing and mix that in along with the UFC. So, like I said, make sure you guys tune in on Saturday night. It's going to be awesome. We'll have a recap of that next week as well. And we'll see if the cowboy can continue his dominance in the predictions over Mr. Campbell. So,
my God,
let's hope so. But for Chad, great analysis, my friend, and I can't wait to watch. Hopefully, we'll be able to message each other a bit during the fights. It's gonna be a good weekend, and we'll be right back with a look at the NL Central for Major League. So stay tuned.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com, as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
Cops ready to let it go. Shimmy, shimmy, go.
back to the Sports Lounge. It's been a great show so far. We covered the World Cup earlier and then just went through a great MMA segment in preparation for this weekend's Machida and Weidman fight. Next up, we have everybody's favorite installment on the show, which is our divisional breakdown in Major League Baseball. We are on the NL Central this week, and Keith Schmidt, our resident baseball expert, he's gonna probably take the lead on this one. But Jeff and Andy are here as well, and again in the lounge, speak as needed. How's it going, Keith?
It's going all right. Again, I'm still somber from the World Cup match with the U.S., but on the baseball we go.
All right, yeah, let's move on.
Thanks for opening old wounds, Keith.
All right, so the NL Central. Right now, it is the widest lead, the widest difference between first and second place. Everybody's favorite cheaters, the Milwaukee Brewers, are leading the division by 6 games over the Cardinals. Then you have Cincinnati, 6.5 back, Pittsburgh, 7 back, and
the
hapless Theo Epstein-led Chicago Cubs sitting at 14 games back, just not looking good. So let's talk about Milwaukee first, because they have been extremely impressive so far. Carlos Gomez, Aramis Ramirez turning it on lately, Ryan Braun, Gene Segura, Lucroy, Jonathan Lucroy. It's a hell of a lineup. What do you think the keys are to Milwaukee's success there, Keith?
Actually, you just mentioned all the offensive players, but I think the key has been their pitching staff. They added Matt Garza this year. Kyle Loesch is pitching probably the best he's ever pitched in his career. Gallardo is back. Marco Estrada, he leaves a little to be desired there. But Willy Peralta, he's pretty good too. But their pitching has been fantastic compared to last season, which they sunk. What were they, 15, 20 games out by the end of the year last year?
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed like when, you know, they were so far out that Braun just took that suspension then instead of fighting it, just because he said, screw it, I'll sit the rest of this year and then start fresh.
Which
next
turned
year.
Out to be a smart move.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, while he hasn't looked, you know, I called them cheaters earlier, and I mean, that's being a little inflammatory.
That's just a bitter Red Sox fan is what that is.
Ouch.
Sorry.
Ouch.
No, I didn't mean that.
Yep.
I just realized I've outnumbered you.
It's okay.
Well, Braun's numbers this year, I mean, they're not like they were as MVP year. But he's hitting .289. He's got 11 bombs and 47 RBI. He's producing like an all-star.
He's been serviceable. I mean, 5 of those home runs came in 2 games at the beginning of the year. And I mean, you know, given it's so funny with the, you know, not to get off on a tangent, guys, but it's with the PED guys. It's so funny that some of them, it seems like a guy like Nelson Cruz was on that list, and he's like better than ever. But then you get a guy like Braun, who's, you know, he's not bad, but he's not quite what he was. And, you know, a guy like Everett Cabrera, who was on that list and who looked like he was going to, you know, if he could steal 60 bases maybe this season, and now he's got 13 and then he can't hit his way out of a paper bag. It's just really funny how some of the guys it seems to affect and others don't. I guess I really don't know. Maybe that's the difference between taking them as an actual performance enhancer, or with a guy like Cruz who's always injured, you got to think maybe he was taking it to get back on the field quicker.
Braun, in his defense, he is dealing with he's got a thumb issue, so that might be zapping some of his power. But I think that goes to show you how much of a mental edge it is, knowing you're on a performance enhancer and, you know, thinking you can go through a brick wall. And then when you don't have it, you know, you're kind of questioning yourself when you get to the plate.
Little placebo effect there, right?
Possibly.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about that, Andy, Jeff, Dean? What do you think about the PEDs and just how these guys are reacting? Okay.
I was gonna let Jeff go there. Sorry. I'm generally on the less angry side as far as PEDs go. I totally get why a person would take them. I don't think that makes them bad people. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can understand why people get mad because, you know, some records get broken and they feel tarnished or whatever, but...
And to me, I mean, the moral aspect of it, Andy, when a guy like Barry Bonds, who is already a great player and is already going to the Hall of Fame...
Stop him, right there, Roger!
him taking...
I was going to say, Andy said that, you know, taking PEDs doesn't make you a bad person. Of course it doesn't. A lot of good guys took PEDs. What makes you a bad person is how you feel about taking them. Like, are you taking them because you want to get ahead in the game? Are you taking what you just don't care? You want to make as much money as possible. And here's the thing about Ryan Braun. He took PEDs because Barry Bonds was such a great clean player who never took PEDs at all. And, you know, he comes along in the early 2000s, and he's the best hitter of all time, my favorite player, a personal favorite of mine. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Same here, Jeff.
But so after that, you know, you got the Cruises and the Bronze of the world who just want to emulate this guy because they don't know how to be as good as he is. And that's all it really is. And the thing about Ryan Braun is he's like the Luis Suarez of baseball. Ooh. Because he's like, wow, I didn't take him. What are you talking about? This guy, you know,
right.
Bumpy and you know, the guy messed up the tests.
He really was an asshole about that.
Yes, he must have had a meeting with his family too, right?
Yeah, he had a meeting with his family. Like, hey, Mr. Ryan Braun, we're already millionaires. Why are you trying to ruin this guy's life who works for this like drug company who's making like $50,000 a year? Like, give me a break. Just say, yeah, I'm sorry I took him, and take some time off, and you'll be back next year, and you'll be doing fine. So screw that guy.
Yeah. I have my moral stance on it. I have a much bigger problem with guys like Braun and Bonds, guys who are all-stars or better already, who take them, you know, they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it to, I mean, they're to, you know, break records or whatever the case may be. I have a big problem with that. I mean, if you're good enough without them to make the All-Star team every year, then don't freaking take them, you know. But, I mean, I'm less inclined to get offended by a minor leaguer. He was making $75,000 a year. He was trying to claw his way up to the big leagues where he can make, you know, $1.5 million. I mean, for that guy, I can see where the allure is, and I can see why they do it. I don't agree with it, but
well, you know. I think this explains Braun too, because part of the problem is that there was this culture where taking drugs was okay. You know, everybody looked the other way. We pretended it wasn't happening until Barry Bonds broke the record, but. You know, if you create this culture and guys are coming up through the minor leagues where everybody's taking steroids so that they can make the majors, and they get to the majors, and, you know, I don't know, half the guys are on it or whatever. Does anyone have any real numbers on that? Who knows?
Right. But if you ain't cheating, you ain't
it was lying. Okay for so long, and then we all, like, as a culture, just flipped this switch where it was suddenly, you know, a crime against humanity, and they all need to be punished and kept out of the Hall of Fame. And I think that's a little unfair to all these people who... You know, up until recently, it was okay. It was something that people did. I don't see why we're all trying to destroy their reputations now.
Except for Roger Clemens. He doesn't have a belong in the Hall of Fame.
He's an asshole.
Stop right there.
All right, so
look, I like 500-foot home runs and 105-mile-an-hour fastballs. It's up to me. They should all take it.
There you go.
Not my body.
This is great NL Central talk.
But, you know, to Keith's point, I think if they, you know, if they didn't get it under control, you might as well just legalize it and let everybody be on the same field. But I think they legitimately, the punishments are harsh enough and the testing has improved so much that I think they have put a big dent in it. But yeah, but back to the NL Central. I like this Milwaukee team, and I think they can continue to play this way. Carlos Gomez, everybody thought was a flash in the pan, and the sabermetric guys don't like him because he doesn't freaking. You know, he's not a big walker, you know, big free swinger. I mean, I've never seen someone swing so often where his helmet flies off because he swung so hard. But he's been doing it for 2.5 years now. And
as
I mean,
much as he swings, his OBP is still 374.
Right, so. Yeah, absolutely. And great in the field as well. He's always been a great outfielder. Braun, I think, is going to be what he's going to be. And, I mean, he's a good middle-of-the-order bat. Chris Davis, a guy we haven't even mentioned, is a up-and-comer. He's got pop. He definitely has pop. He's one of those low-average home run guys. But
he leads the team in home runs right now.
Yeah, when you surround a guy like him with good solid hitters like Aramis Ramirez, just a professional hitter, I think they can keep it up. I don't see any reason they can't keep it up. So,
and we haven't even Jonathan Lucroy, in my opinion, is the best offensive catcher in baseball.
One, if not, top two or three for sure.
He's up there. 331, 8 home runs, 42 RBIs, 28 doubles.
Then freaking
a machine.
K-Rod.
Oh yeah,
K-Rod in the pen. Who saw that coming?
Resurgence after how many
years? Resurgence. The drug dealers. Yeah, the PED guys.
No, I mean K-Rod. What's that? 27 saves so far this year.
Yeah, he went to the Mets and he fell apart, and it looked like he was on his way out. He was done, yeah. And all of a sudden, resurgence.
Not to beat on the poor Mets, but I was just gonna say. What do you expect going to that team? But
everybody goes to die.
Right. All right, so next up we have the Cardinals, who have been a real stalwart, making the playoffs every year, World Series. They're 6 games back, which is far from out of it. But I haven't really liked what I've seen from them this year.
Underperforming.
Yeah, and I mean, I think top to bottom, their roster is probably the best in the division. They do have some guys who, like Keith said, underperformed. Just give us your breakdown of the Cardinals, Keith.
For my money, they have the best rotation out of the division, top to bottom, including the best pitcher in the division, Adam Wainwright. The guy is solid Cy Young candidate almost every year. And the guys following him, Lance Lynn, Shelby Miller, Michael Walker, who's injured right now, Jaime Garcia, who's also injured, Carlos Martinez. These are all young pitchers, and they're studs.
It's kind of unfair, isn't it?
Almost. it almost looks that way. And then you go to their lineup, and, it's almost an American League lineup there. There's very few holes. I mean, their catcher, again, with Lucroy, Yadier Molina, he's probably be the starting catcher for the All-Star team this year.
He's the best catcher in baseball. When you factor in
defense, for sure.
He could hit .220 and still be a top 5 catcher, yeah. But he doesn't.
But the guy's underperforming. Matt Holliday, I don't think he's having a normal Matt Holliday season. At least the power-wise, he's not. Alan Craig, he had an awful start. Where last year he was... he was hitting like .320.
Oh, yeah.
Loads of power, loads of RBIs. Matt Adams got off to a slow start, their first baseman.
He's really turned it up recently. But
yes, he has. Oh, boy. And Alan Craig's starting to pick it up, too. And they just recalled their number one prospect, Oscar Tavares. He's starting in right field tonight.
I know he his first go round wasn't anything to write home about this year. But
it didn't go so well, but... Mike Matheny does not have faith in him to play center field. And I think that could end up being a problem for the Cardinals. And that leads me to my prediction. I was going to save this for later.
Oh, save it for later, Keith.
Ooh, I got to say it now.
All right.
Oscar Tavares is going to be traded to the Tampa Bay Rays for David Price.
All right. I mean, I think that's the kind of guy that the Rays would want for Price.
Right. Young, up and coming, cheap.
Still under control, there. Right? Yeah.
That's a real ballsy call, Keith. Well, we're gonna give you the amateur deputy. You're almost a cowboy with that call.
Well, Price still has a year under control,
right?
Next season, so it's not like they're just renting him for this season. They still have him all of next year, and I think he would be the turning point in this division. It put the Cardinals over the top when you're coming out with Wainwright and David Price.
Yeah. So, Andy, if it was unfair before they added David Price.
That's what I was just thinking. they already have this great rotation. But, if you have a chance to add Price into it and maybe move, Martinez to the bullpen or something.
Martinez isn't even really in the rotation. Because it's Waka and Jaime Garcia.
But well, Waka, do we know how long Waka's going to be out? That's kind of a scary injury, isn't it?
Yeah.
Both of them. Walker and Garcia, so.
Right. But, I mean, if they were to add Price, can you imagine? I mean, Walker's just a kid. Do you remember how the Rays used Price out of the pen when he was just a kid in the playoffs?
Yeah, he was terrifying.
Can you imagine if the Cardinals could, I mean, if they could throw Walker into the pen?
Already, for the, Jason Mott and Rosenthal?
Yeah.
He was pretty good out of the pen last year, wasn't he, Walker? Or was he only a starter?
No, he was a starter. He threw the no-hitter, yeah. Right?
It was Martinez who was so good.
He threw a great game against the Red Sox in the World Series.
Right.
And, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, Martinez was the you know, he looks like Pedro a little bit. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I think that they can. I think the Cardinals are a great roster. They can make noise. Their bats. The bats are the problem.
Hit at all this year. It's like the opposite of last year where they had that insane average with runners on base. And then it's just not happening this year.
Craig hit 400-something last
year. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
He's
dangerous.
You know, I'm like one of those guys who I believe in the sabermetrics, but I also need the eye test. But that's like one of those things that's like so obviously going to come back to the mean. Like, well, there's no rational reason that the guy hits better in the clutch unless his name's David Ortiz, and then it's accurate. But
that's what brings me to that prediction with the Price and Tavares thing, because if you look at their offense struggling the way it is, why wouldn't you play Oscar Tavares every game?
Yeah,
right.
In center field. And Matheny doesn't trust him out there. He said he's not going to sacrifice the defense in center for the offense. So they have a problem because Craig can play first and right, but what do you do with Matt Adams?
Right.
So yeah. And you're not going to take Matt Holliday out of the lineup. So even today, he's back in St. Louis starting today, but he's starting in right field. Holliday's got the game off.
Yeah. And, I mean, John Jay would be the clear candidate. To
right.
Be
I mean, the guy can play center field, but he can't hit it.
Right. So so next up, another good team. This division, you know, as we go through it here, pretty stacked top to bottom, except for the Cubs. The
four potential playoff teams.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. So the Reds are next here, 6.5 back right now. What do you think? What do you think, Keith? What's your breakdown of the Reds?
I think they're underachieving. Again,
really,
I
would have gone the other way, but no, that's just me.
No, they have a really good lineup, and again, an excellent pitching staff. Cueto's back this year. Last year he was hurt, injured all year, and when he did pitch, he was very ineffective. But he's pitching like an ace now. Latos was down for a while, but Tony Cingrani was in the rotation. He did fairly well. Homer Bailey is a good pitcher who they just locked up for big money. Mike Leake's been pitching well. Alfredo Simon, he's been pitching great as well. So they shouldn't be seven games behind the Brewers. I think their pitching staff is better than the Brewers' pitching staff, and their lineup is just as good.
Personally, I think Cueto's pitch. I mean, he's pitched. I mean, he would probably win the Cy Young, right? If it came today.
Well, if Clayton Kershaw wasn't in the league, probably.
That's true.
Although he missed some time, right?
He did. Kershaw missed a little time. I said if it was today, right now, Cueto's
still wins.
It's close. But I mean, I think Cueto's pitched a little bit over his head. I mean, his ERA is below 2, if I'm not mistaken. So I think he regresses a little bit. Homer Bailey has pitched terrible, really, for a lot of the year. I mean, his ERA is over 4, right?
Yeah,
4.39, 1.35. I like him a lot. I think his natural ability is a 3.5 guy.
Yeah.
So I think he comes back. I don't think Alfredo Simon keeps it up, but I mean they don't really need him in the rotation. I mean, I know he's got the 10 wins and he's pitched great, but I mean, you got to think. I mean, it's Alfredo Simon. They have to think eventually he's going to come back down to earth, especially being a reliever as the innings pile up. A former reliever, the innings
that
pile
might
up.
Catch up on him at the end.
But you know, Latos is an ace, has ace stuff.
Absolutely.
So again, I mean, they Andy, looking at the pitching in this division, I mean, it's pretty crazy how. You know, these staffs go 3, 4, 5 deep of just great pitchers.
And we've been shitting on the Cubs, but their staff's not that bad either. I mean, Samardzija is great, even though he can't win a game to save.
Yeah, not his fault.
The Cubs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a pretty impressive pitching in that division.
And you can't talk about this, you know, the Reds without, I mean, the Reds and pitching with the Chapman is maybe.
Oh, yeah.
If he's not the best closer in baseball, he's damn close. And, I mean, I think.
Definitely the most uncomfortable at bat.
Sure. And
oh, I thought you meant because he got hit in the head.
No, I know for batters. I mean, the guy's throwing 105 and he has no idea where it's going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then looking at their lineup, I mean, they do have a good but not great lineup, in my opinion. I mean, Votto, great hitter, of course. I know Keith's real high on Billy Hamilton. I'm not quite as much of a Billy Hamilton guy. Let's have Keith talk about Billy Hamilton a little bit.
Billy Hamilton is my binky. Center fielder. Fastest guy I've ever seen run the bases. I saw him tag up on a ball that was hit just on the outfield grass behind second base, and he scored. This guy is flat out amazing, and he struggled to begin the season, but he's starting to pick it up now. If he bunts, if you don't field it on the second hop, he's safe. I don't care where the ball goes. He steals bases at will. I mean, he has been caught a lot, but I think it's just him being cocky. You know, pitches with good moves still going anyway, but he's going to learn as the years go by, and that percentage is going to go way up. He's got 34 stolen bases right now, and I think he hit 200 in April.
Right.
So,
I remember reading some article over the summer about they timed him from first to second. And I can't remember the number, but I think it's like under 3 seconds or something ridiculous like that.
It's close to 3 seconds.
Where basically, even if the catcher does everything right and gets a perfect throw right to whoever's covering second, you might not get him.
Right.
It's just crazy.
It's Bo Jackson. I mean,
I fell in love with this kid last year. He came up as a September call-up. Dusty Baker was the manager. He put him in the pinch run. They were playing the Cardinals. Yadier Molina is the best defensive catcher in the league. The strongest arm.
Yep, absolutely.
He knew Hamilton was going. He stole second. On the very next pitch, he stole third. I said, that's it. I love this. I love it. I love speed.
He's certainly exciting. I mean, he's still pretty raw, and he doesn't walk, which is really not good for someone with his kind of speed. He needs to get on base.
But he's a rookie, though. He's a rookie. So he's hitting 280. He's got a 312 OBP.
And if you look at his minor league stats, there's a pretty significant chance the 280 doesn't hold up. I mean, it's just my guess. But I do like the kid, and I mean, he's certainly an exciting guy, and he's certainly, you know, he's hell when he does get on base. What the hell's wrong with Joey Votto, guys? I mean, he's 260, 6 home runs, 22 RBIs. He's only 30. I don't think he's getting old. Do you think any injuries have caught up to him, or he's just...
He was injured early in the year. But he's come back, and I don't know. He's still not at the all-star form, but he's playing better. I think they got him batting in the two hole.
Yeah, because he gets on him because
he's an OBP machine.
Right. I mean, I think
even batting 260, his OBP is 400. So.
Yeah. Watching him hit, I think he's almost too selective. I think he doesn't swing enough. You know.
I agree with you.
You know. I mean, I think. You know, getting a walk's great, but I mean, he's a big bat for them, and he needs to, you know, he needs to expand the zone a little bit and swing at the freaking ball. Just my opinion.
He's always trying to work the count.
Build up
the pitch count. But you're right though, when he gets that first pitch fastball,
right,
he needs to swing here and there.
Yeah. Jay Bruce,
I completely disagree. By the way,
you disagree with us?
Yeah.
What's your take, Andy?
I just think it's great that, you know, he did interviews on this. He made a decision that his job is to not make outs. So that's what he does. He, you know, just needs to get on base. And if that means taking a walk, then that means taking a walk. I like that. I think it's fun to have someone who's very upfront about it. I see where you guys are coming from. Sometimes you have to put the ball in play to make something happen. I can't disagree with that. I happen to like him, and I think it's a bummer that he's not having a great season. That's all.
Right. No, and I mean, that's a valid point. And there are guys who have made their living taking walks.
Like Wade Boggs, right?
The problem with Votto is that he's not one of those three true outcome guys. So
yeah,
like a guy like Dunn takes a ton of walks, but when he does hit the ball, he hits it out. You know? And Votto's a lot of doubles, a lot of singles. But, I mean, he's a professional hitter. And, I mean, he's not going to hit 260.
You know why we're complaining about it now? Because he's not hitting doubles.
Yeah,
he's not hitting home runs. You know, because he did the same thing in his MVP season. He was very selective. But when he did make contact,
he hit it hard.
For extra bases. And he's not doing that now.
Yeah. The rest of their lineup, Jay Bruce has having a bad year, but it's over the last couple of weeks he's really turned it on. I mean, you got to think he's going to end out with 35 home runs. It just it happens every year. I mean, I think if he does,
that's going to be a spectacular second half. He's only got 7 right now.
Yeah, so. I mean, if you look at what he's done recently,
I agree, his track record.
Brandon Phillips is getting old, but he keeps on plugging away. He still can do it. I like Devin Mesoraco quite a bit as a guy coming out of nowhere that no one thought was going to be anything. He was
a big-time prospect.
He's got pop.
He's a big-time prospect, and he's coming into his own now.
He's kind of a post-hype sleeper type of guy. Right, yeah, right. Absolutely.
And Todd Frazier this year, for whatever reason, I don't know if he's coming into his own or if maybe he's just a little lucky, but... He leads the team in home runs and RBIs.
Yeah, him and Brian Dozier both sold their souls to the devil before the before the season. But
maybe it's the Billy Hamilton effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh shit! I got to throw him a fastball before he steals.
Right, absolutely. Or I'm sure hitting with those other guys in the lineup, it's big help for him. Right, so moving on, we have last year's darlings. This year, not so much, but they're definitely still in the thick of it, sitting only 7 games back. The Pittsburgh Pirates with your reigning NL MVP, Andrew McCutchen. I don't want to say what's wrong, because they haven't been bad.
I'll tell you what's wrong.
There we go. Keith, thank you.
A.J. Burnett is gone, and Liriano is not pitching like the Liriano pitched
last year. And he's hurt.
And he's hurt now, but when he was in the rotation, he was terrible.
Do you think they got a little cocky there, bringing in Edison Volquez, thinking they could turn him around like Liriano?
For the money they're paying them, I mean, it's not a huge market team, so it's not like they can go out and sign you David Prices and whatnot. But I think their number one prospect, Jameson Taillon, was supposed to be ready this year, and in spring training. Blew out his elbow, Tommy John. I think they were dependent on him. Maybe that's why they let A.J. Burnett walk. And I'm sure they were expecting Liriano to pitch like he pitched last year. Well, maybe with a little regression. I mean, Liriano regressed to the point of, what, a 5 ERA?
Right. I don't think it's quite that bad. But
it's close. It's close.
He had actually, before he went down, yeah, his ERA is 4.6. Before he went down, he had finally started to pitch a little bit better. If you look, he had 0 runs and then 2 runs and consecutive starts. But it's kind of the same deal with him. A million pitches, walk in the freaking ballpark
right,
again.
5-6 innings and but, help. But he didn't pitch that way last year.
No.
Last year, he was consistent. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, 2 runs.
But you got to think when he comes back, I mean, he's done this before. If he can get it going, and he's more than capable of getting it going and being the best pitcher in the National League for a month or two, that they can certainly stay in this race and claw their way back into the race. I really like their lineup. It's a good young lineup with McCutchen and Marte. Marte's not having a great year, but I think I like him.
I like him too.
I think he's going to turn it around. And
Gregory Polanco, who just came up from the minors.
Huge prospect.
I remember watching them play the Red Sox in spring training and the announcer saying that he has the best tools out of the entire outfield. So that's kind of scary when you think... McCutchen's the MVP, and Marte, he had almost a Rookie of the Year, campaign last year. So to say he's got better tools than those two guys, that's pretty impressive.
Right, and Neil Walker, I think, is a pretty underrated asset over at second base. He can really hit. I like him quite a bit. And Pedro Alvarez, a guy who he serves his purpose. He needs to hit a few more home runs this year. He's brought the average up a little bit this year, but it's only up to .239. Yeah. Stealing some bases this year, which he didn't before. But for him to carry value and for them to make noise, I think he needs to hit at least 35 home runs. I mean, I think he needs to be that guy for them. They don't have anyone. I mean, I'm not a huge Ike Davis guy, of course.
Now, first base is a big hole for them. It always has been. they're platooning him with Gabby Sanchez,
their shortstop. Yeah, Sanchez. I mean, it's not much of a platoon.
No,
but you know their roster doesn't. You know, as you would expect, given the payroll constraints, their roster doesn't quite measure up to the first three that we've looked at.
Well, but they're a scrappy team, and they get that timely hitting and decent pitching, and they're not out of it by any stretch.
Yet. No, and they certainly have the potential. That's the thing. I mean, McCutchen is. I mean, he's having just as good of a year this year as he did last year.
That guy's great.
You know, just they're not as good. Any thoughts on the Pirates, Andy?
No, I think you guys cover it. It's, you know, it was tough team, and you can only afford, like you said, the Volquezes or the Burnetts of the world. Sometimes those deals work out, and you make the playoffs, and sometimes they don't work out, and you kind of sit around 500, so...
Quickly here, we'll talk about the Cubs. I think they're out of it, right? I mean, they're
I think that's safe to say.
They're not making any noise, most likely. I don't hate their roster as much as maybe their own fans do.
I love their minor league system.
Yeah.
I love the guys they got coming up next year. Yeah.
And they have some
possibly next year or the year after. Chris Bryant was, I think, the number 2 overall pick last year.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is annihilating the minor leagues right now. Just phenomenal. He's batting like .350, like .25. He's already in AAA. He was drafted last year. He's already playing in AAA. This kid is dynamite. I can't wait for him to come up. Then they got a shortstop prospect, Javier Baez, who hit like 37 home runs last year in AA.
Mm-hmm.
He should be on the rise pretty soon. And an outfield prospect, Jorge Sola. And a second base prospect, Alcantara, I think his name is. The problem with that is their minor leagues are loaded with position players. Talented position players, but not many pitchers, though.
I mean, you might think they... I mean, the word on the street is that they're shopping Samardzija. I assume because they don't want to pay him. Is that your take?
Well,
on
they offered him a deal, but he turned it down. You know, kind of like I think it was like 5 for $90.
Yeah,
he's turned it down. I mean, he'll get more than that. But I'll tell you what, Jake Arrieta.
Oof.
If you watched him pitch last night against the Red Sox,
yeah,
he looked really good. He was a high prospect in Baltimore back in like 2009, and they got him last year in a trade for Scott Feldman. And it's panned out really well for them. I mean, he's pitching really, really well. So, you know, he could end up their ace. Travis Wood's pretty good pitcher.
Yeah.
The lefty.
I mean, Travis Wood had a god-awful start to the season, but he's right at the ship a bit, and I think he'll be solid. Hamill and Ajax are both a little...
neither one of them guys will be in Chicago after next month.
No.
They'll both get dealt, along with Samardzija.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like Keith says, I mean, they're built for the future, not built for now.
Just going to compile those prospects, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, now, the guy I'd like to talk about on their offense is Starlin Castro. Mm. Given, Keith mentioned they have another huge shortstop prospect, and after the massively disappointing year Castro had last year. You would think that maybe they were considering even they gave him the big money, but maybe they were thinking, you know, we're gonna have to roll with this other guy eventually. But he's really turned it around and looks again like the stud that he's supposed to be.
Yes,
Rizzo is just I really like Rizzo too. I think he's just gonna keep getting better. So
I think Theo has a hot on for him. Yeah. The first thing he did when he got to Chicago was trade for Rizzo.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look, I mean, his numbers are up across the board this year, Rizzo's. Castro's numbers are up across the board. And, I mean, out of the guys who play every day for them, I mean, frankly, they might be the only two that are in the lineup 3 years from now, right?
Possibly. If Castro makes it. Because think of the return they could get for Starlin Castro.
Yeah, make some money,
that's what
though.
I was thinking, yeah.
They gave him a pretty big contract.
Exactly my point.
Yeah.
If you're not going to contend this year or even next, they could get a king's ransom for him.
What do you think, Andy?
Believe in these, if you're believing these middle infield prospects they have coming up, I mean, wouldn't you have to think about trading him?
That's what I'm saying. You know,
he has more value now than he had last year for sure, and who knows what kind of year he's going to have next.
Castro's still a kid himself, so
he's not a great defender, right? I know he has some mental mistakes.
He's like Alfonso Soriano at shortstop.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Hanley without the speed as far as his. He seems to have Manny Ramirez, Hanley Ramirez, just a little
lackadaisical.
I don't think he means anything by it. You know, I don't think he's a bad seed or anything by any stretch.
I agree.
But he was every bit the prospect that that any of these guys were. I mean, he was a huge prospect. But I mean, they're not going to contend this year. But if you guys will throw this out there, if you guys are the Cubs, I assume you're moving Samardzija, you're moving Edwin Jackson, you're moving Hamill. What kind of offer is it going to take to get Castro?
Oh, that's going to be a big offer. That's going to be your two top pitching prospects.
Yeah. So even a
position player,
even more than the bigger offer than what it would take to get Price.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Castro signed for, I'm not sure how many years, but at least 6 years. So, yeah, you're going to have to pay big money for Starlin Castro.
This is one of those team-friendly deals, I take it?
Yeah, I believe it was, because they signed him. He was still
young. Before last season.
A million a year, so yeah. Deal. Yeah, they signed him at the right time, huh?
Yeah, before, well, it didn't look that way last year. I mean, if you're not as familiar, Andy, he was...
I remember.
Yeah, he was supposed to be fantastic last year, and he was terrible.
Shit the bed,
I mean, really, really bad. Just like a whole year long slump. it's looking more. You know, he was such a prime candidate to bounce back because I mean, you just see the talent flowing out of the kid.
Right.
You know, but I think it'd be real interesting if they were to move him.
I guess it all depends on your internal evaluation of him, right? Like, if you think this is an outlier year, then you should trade him. But if you think that he's going to be this good for the next 7 years, then, yeah, give him around for when you actually are contending.
Right. And, I mean, they have no reason to trade any of the prospects, obviously.
No.
Unless you're going to go hitting for pitching or something like that, which doesn't happen.
You'd have to really knock his socks off to get Starlin Castro from him.
Right.
You
know, and I realize I'm contradicting myself.
Three top prospect kind of deal.
Yeah. What were you saying, Andy?
I realize I'm contradicting what I said earlier, but, you know, just because you have guys coming up at his position doesn't mean you need to get rid of that logjam now, you know what I mean? Like, these things always take care of themselves eventually.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, given Castro's defensive issues, I mean, you know, he could theoretically move to third, I'm sure, if he had to.
It's amazing that these guys never want to do that, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, like, the thing is, Chris Bryant is a third baseman.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's the whole issue. Because, yeah, the easiest thing to do is, Baez was the shortstop prospect. You're moving to third base. What do you do with Chris Bryant?
Right.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, but, yeah, to Andy's point, I mean, I think that's more like a shortstop's like quarterback of the infield, right? You don't, you know, it's kind of an insult.
I know, yeah. I understand. Like you're going to play outfield now. That would piss you off.
All right, guys, so... Let's get our predictions in. I'll start us off here. I'm going to say the Brewers hold on. The Brewers have, I think they have a big enough lead that they're going to hold on. I'm going to go Brewers, Reds, Cardinals, Pirates, Cubs. Mm. Keith?
I say St. Louis jumps over Milwaukee after they trade for Price.
That's a bold one. I like it.
And also Cincinnati, they're going to leapfrog Milwaukee as well. Milwaukee finishes in third.
Oh, wow.
Cincinnati grabs the second wild card.
All right.
And then followed by Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Chicago.
Got it. And Andy?
I also think the Brewers are going to come back to earth a bit, but they do have a six-game lead, and I think they're good enough to hold on to that. You know, the Cardinals will make it interesting. So I'll go Brewers, Cardinals, Reds, Pirates, Cubs, which that's what it is now, I believe. Yeah. So,
really going out on a limb there.
Yeah, exactly. Everything will stay exactly the same.
Yeah. All right, very good, guys. So one more segment. Stay tuned for our recap of the NBA draft and a look at NBA free agency coming up right after some messages. Hope everyone's enjoying this as much as we are, and we'll be right back.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Yeah, that's right. This cut goes out to all y'all that's been missing us for mad years. One love, yo. Yeah, that's right. He's got game. PE 1998.
If man is the father of the son.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge, folks. We're ready for our final segment here. Look at the NBA. We hope you've enjoyed the World Cup talk, the UFC / boxing talk, and I particularly enjoyed the baseball talk. I thought we really dove deep into the NL Central. Keith had some fantastic analysis, so it's great to have Andy speaking up. Andy's usually the guy who's in the lounge at the beginning, and then you can't find him as the night goes on, and then he just kind of magically appears later with his wallet a little bit lighter, you know. But it was great to, you know, he's taking it easy tonight, so it's great to have him in on the baseball talk. And I'd like to apologize to our soccer expert Jeff Machado, who was in the lounge there for the baseball talk, and I failed to get his prediction. So, Jeff, a real interesting prediction. So why don't you let us know that before we talk basketball?
Okay, well, I think the Pirates are going to do exactly the same thing that they've been doing. They're going to be fine. Finish, you know, what, third, fourth? What are they in right now?
They're in fourth.
Not important. Talking about the Brewers, 6 games up. They suck. They're going down. They're a bunch of cheating bastards. And there's only one city in this country that has better fans than my Boston Red Sox and St. Louis Cardinals. And no matter how much I hate the Cardinals and I hate their stupid uniforms with the bat with the two little birds on it, looks really dumb, they always end up winning the division, winning the World Series somehow. They win like 80 games, they win the World Series. So the St. Louis Cardinals are going to finish in first place. The better prediction is that the Chicago Cubs, 14 games out, are not going to finish last. I'm not saying they're going to win the division. I'm not saying that anybody's going to care about anything they do except for people who live in Chicago and they're retired and they don't have to work during the days and go to Wrigley Field. But they're not going to finish in last place. You heard it right here from the not-baseball soccer expert in the Sports Lounge. Mark it down, people.
What kind of cigar was he smoking?
All right, Keith. I'll see you at the end of the season, my friend.
There was one he picked up in the Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
So Jeff, thanks. Jeff is always one with the bold predictions. So we love having him on. I like a guy who's not afraid to throw it out there, you know, and not just go with the chalk. You know, he's a.
I feel like this is all directed at me.
Not at all, Andy. No, not at all, Andy. You made the one chalk prediction, Andy. It's you know, don't get self. Self-conscious, buddy.
What'd you say, John? Oh, never mind.
So, Cubs not in last place. I don't see how it happens, but, you know, Jeff Jeff could very well be right, and then we'll be the ones singing the blues. So with that, on to the NBA, where if you remember last week, we had voice of the Boston Celtics, Sean Grandy, on the show, and he gave us some fantastic insight into what the Celts were thinking and just the draft in general and basketball in general. It was really a pleasure having him on. And just, I'm the kind of guy who can sit and talk basketball for 10 hours with anybody, and to sit and talk it with him was really cool. But this week we have the Standard Lounge guys here. So draft took place, and for such an exciting time leading up to the draft, where we really had this feeling that there was going to be a lot of moving and shaking and a lot of crazy stuff going on, it really, really played true to form. I mean, almost too true to form for my liking. But, a couple of surprises. I think I had said that I didn't think that Embiid would make it past the Sixers at 3, and that ended out being accurate. I just thought the upside was just too good, just too high to ignore. So while that might have surprised some, I don't think it surprised listeners of the Sports Lounge or our loungers. Exum falling to 5 surprised me. I didn't think Aaron Gordon would go before him. But not a huge shock by any stretch. I'm just we had said we thought it was a top 4 draft, and Gordon snuck his way into the top 4, and he looks like a little Blake Griffin. He could be Blake Griffin, and that certainly is worthy of a top 4 pick. Noah Vonleh falling to 9 was pretty surprising. And we don't want to talk about the home team too much, but I think the Celtics were a team that everybody thought was going to make some moves, and them holding the picks and not doing anything, I don't think it was for lack of trying, but that surprised me.
A smart pick.
Yeah, Marcus Smart. I do like Marcus Smart, but I don't care what other people say. The writing's on the wall for Rajon Rondo. I think it's hype for the media and hype to keep its trade value up that they're saying they're going to play these two guys together. They are 100% trading Rondo this year. 100%. Heard it here first.
I agree.
So, I'm going to check in with Andy first. Give me your thoughts on the draft, Andy. Kind of what surprised you? How you felt about the Cavs taking Wiggins? Do you think it was the right pick for them? And go from there.
Yeah, I think I said this to you earlier, but I think it's funny that, for 2 years we were all told that Andrew Wiggins was going to be the number one pick. And then, we had a whole year of debating who that pick was going to be, and I think it's funny that it ended up being Wiggins after all that. But I think, it worked out really well for the teams at the top of the draft. They all got, the best deal for them. Like, the Bucks have wanted Parker all along. They got him. The Cavaliers got Wiggins, who... I'm not sure he's going to end up being the best player in this draft, but he has the best fit for them. It works for the Sixers taking Embiid because they don't really want to be great next year anyway. They get to tank and go through this whole process over again.
Right, and with Noel coming back, he's basically their rookie this year.
Yeah, exactly. They get it's kind of like when Blake came in his second year after missing his whole rookie year. Although Blake was good right away, I'm not sure that's going to be true for Noel.
We're setting the bar a little high there.
Yeah, that's what I realized. I wanted to back off that as soon as I said it. I was a little surprised that the Celtics took Marcus Smart, not because I thought they didn't like him, but just there was so much mental makeup talk about him. I got the feeling that teams didn't like him, but I think that's a really smart pick, as you guys already said. I think that's that could work out really well if he, because he would have been the number one pick last year probably, although that was a much weaker draft. So,
yep. And I think with we said this with Sean Grandy, but we thought it was going to come down to Randall or Aaron Gordon, and we had said was if they're trying to win now, you pick Randall. If they're building for the future, you pick Gordon. I think you make the same. It's the same exact argument with Smart. Right. If they thought they were going to bring someone else in, a guy like Kevin Love or something like that, they would have taken Randall because he's ready to contribute right away. If they know they're moving Rondo, Smart's the pick. Right. Do you agree with that, Andy?
I do agree with that. Yeah. Randall's the most NBA ready. Well, outside of Parker, I think Parker's pretty ready outside of the defensive issues, but you're going to have to hide that no matter what.
Right. Well, the thing with Parker too is that he actually wanted to play in Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is a rarity. It's a rarity. It reminds you know Milwaukee's kind of the new like Vancouver Grizzlies. If you remember when Stevie Francis got drafted to the Grizzlies and wouldn't put on the hat.
Yeah, right.
I'm not playing there. But you know while we're talking about the Bucks. How about let's segue? So great draft analysis, Andy. I mean, I'd like to talk more, but I don't think there's that much to talk about.
Well, like, what's the biggest shock? I guess it would be Elfrid Payton going to the Sixers at 10, and that was did they make that pick for someone else?
Well,
I forget.
They traded him for Saric. So the Sixers ended out with.
Oh yeah, so they made that deal before they took the pick.
Right.
Then,
so
right?
The Magic, the Magic passed on Exum and ended out with Elfrid Payton, and then. The Sixers ended out with Embiid, who's not going to play this year, and Saric, who's going to be in Turkey for the next 2 years. So they really gave that vote of confidence to their fans that they're looking to we're looking to contend now. Maybe not.
Just in case you guys thought we might be good in the near future, you can just put those thoughts to bed.
Right. But clearly, and Keith just pointed this out, we should talk briefly about this. The biggest shock of the first round was Bruno Caboclo, which I'm sure I'm butchering his name, the Brazilian going to the Raptors. A lot of folks didn't even have him getting drafted.
And, the Brazilian Kevin Durant is what I'm hearing, right?
Well, the Brazilian, everything you hear about him, they were comparing him to the Greek Freak in Milwaukee.
Yes, right.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, again, butchering the name.
Yeah, I don't even know how to say it.
But they're saying, I mean, that kid is, I mean, he looks like he looks like the real deal. They call him the freak because of, you know, he looks like Gumby. You know, yeah. He's a 6'11", but can play point guard. But he was considered very raw, and the Bucks sucked so bad that they gave him a bunch of minutes.
Right.
This guy, Caboclo, is 18 years old and is appreciably more raw than the Greek Freak. To take him in a draft, a loaded draft like this at 20, is not great value in that pick. You know, when you see the guys who went after him, I mean, McGarry.
Do you like McGarry that much, though? I'm kind of talking myself out of everybody who came after.
I like Napier.
I do like Napier, yeah. That would be the guy I would say.
The Raptors, I mean, as we'll talk about, they're hell-bent on hanging on to Kyle Lowry, so I can see why they wouldn't take a point guard.
Yeah, that almost sends a message, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, like what the Celtics did. But
refused
to admit. I like McGarry, I think. I mean, if he would have not been hurt last year, I think he would have gone in the top 10. PJ
that's
Harrison.
A better fit for him with the Thunder. I mean, they're just looking for role players at this point. That's what Mitch McGarry's future is, right?
Yeah, I mean, could he do for them? Could he be a better version of Nick Collison in 2 years? I think absolutely.
Yeah, I think that probably could. Yeah,
and I mean,
although we forget how good Collison was in college, I just wanted to say that briefly.
He was great in college, and he's been a good pro. But, you know, just kind of
a solid career. Yeah.
Solid, unspectacular. You know, I think that probably sums up McGarry right there.
Yeah.
But PJ Hairston, I like a lot. But, I mean, there's a lot of good players in this draft. And to reach on a guy like that, I suppose they could hit a home run and we'll all look ridiculous. I mean, even a guy like Cleanthony Early, who didn't go until the fourth pick of the second round, I think probably might have made more sense there. But regardless, that's a bit of a shock. But other than that, the draft, that guy, like I said, played to form. I thought it was funny that the Heat ended up getting Shabazz Napier, even though everybody knew they wanted him because LeBron tweeted about it. You know?
Yeah, he really kind of like ruined their bargaining position there, didn't he?
Right. But the Bobcats were happy to help him out anyway. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Beat us again. But yeah, so again, we were talking about the Bucks there for a minute, and the big news over the last couple of days, really like I don't remember a news bomb dropping like this where I just looked at the headline and said, "What the fuck is this Jason Kidd fiasco?" So, you know, for anyone who's been under a rock for the last 3 or 4 days, across the news wire comes Jason Kidd demands to run basketball operations for the New Jersey Nets. and is swiftly denied. And it was like, what the hell was that? I mean, they had a pretty good roster. The Prokhorov went out and spent all that money and just totally mortgaged the future for what ended up being not a great playoff run or anything. I mean, Kidd, I thought did okay as the coach. I didn't think he was anything spectacular. So without any context, him doing that just seemed like, I mean, just like the stupidest friggin' thing. Dumbest thing I'd ever seen. Kind of like, you know, the guy behind the counter at McDonald's going up and saying, you know, I'd like to run the company now. But now that we've gotten some context, it seems like he had an offer. He had an offer on the table from the Bucks. He knew he was going to go to the Bucks, and so that's why he said, "Well, I'll stay in New Jersey if they do this." I mean, I still think it's kind of an asshole move, but it was a good way to make New Jersey not want to keep him even a little bit. And personally, I mean, I really like New Jersey's brought in Lionel Hollins, and I think he's a better coach than Jason Kidd, and I think they'll be better off with him. But Jeff,
yes,
I think this situation calls for your expertise. What do you think? How do you feel about this?
Well, the thing about him is, he's an idiot. I don't know if you ever heard him speak, but he's a really really stupid human being. So I don't know. Like, he's never even coached a team. And they make him the coach. Why do they make him the coach? I don't know. Because he was a point guard. Like, all point guards can coach. You know,
like Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, like Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, he's a great coach. He's a great GM and everything. Because if you can point guard, then you understand how to run a team. And, you know, like, I just don't understand the Jason Kidd situation. There's no reason he should have been a coach in the first place. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he retired, what, 20, 30 years ago? He's still trying to be a coach. How come Kareem Abdul-Jabbar can't be a coach? Just because he's a jerk? It's not like he's the only jerk. Like, Jason Kidd, I don't care how good of a point guard he is, how many assists he had. The guy doesn't know anything about coaching an NBA basketball team. And he got to do that. And now he's like, just because I'm Jason Kidd and everybody knows who I am, I want to get as much money as the highest paid coach in the league. There's a whole bunch that just signed a bunch of contracts. I want to do. Apparently, friends with the GM at Milwaukee. Okay, so it's not enough that you've never coached a team. You just got signed to a 4-year, what, $12 million contract. Like, you know, this isn't cool. Guys in the league that, you know, I played with on the playground, and I was a kind of an okay player. I'm going to make the Hall of Fame, even though I'm like not really anything special. And these guys are like making a lot more money and doing stuff. Like, I want to do that. So he's going to go to Milwaukee and be a coach? Like, what is the point? What is the point of that? So Jason Kidd, like, I'm supposed to care that Jason Kidd is going to get over $10 million a year to coach, or $7 million or whatever? Like, what is wrong with these people? What is wrong with these owners? There are so many guys. My dad could be a better NBA coach than Jason Kidd. Why is my dad not making $4 million a year? Tell me that.
This is, thanks, Jeff. Perfect. You know, I also on a personal level, I think Jason Kidd, when he was a player, was a coach killer. Forced his way out of a couple of situations.
That's kind of the funniest thing about this, right? It's not the first time he screwed over a coach, except right. Now he's a coach himself.
Right. But I mean, based on some of the stuff Jeff said, I feel like I have to defend him a little bit. As a player, to say he wasn't that great, I think, is not accurate. I think he's really, really good. And especially in his prime, he was the kind of guy where he went to your team and you were immediately a contender.
The best team he ever had was the New Jersey Nets finals team. I mean, come on. He was never even the best player. He was never even the best point guard in the league. He was a top five point guard, maybe. He brought a team to the finals and they did nothing. They were terrible.
They made it to the finals twice in a row.
Crappy team.
If memory serves, so bad. And when he was in Phoenix, I mean, he was fantastic. Regardless, I mean, that's neither here nor there. But
maybe he got bullied in Brooklyn. There was probably five players on that team older than he was, with more experience in the league than him. Pierce Garnett. Right. These guys didn't listen to him. So he said, I want to go to Milwaukee where everybody's young.
No, I mean, this came down. Jeff was right about one thing. It came down, not just one thing, Jeff. it came down to money. And the big issue that he had is that Derek Fisher, who was doing the exact same thing that Jason Kidd did, which is going from from the court.
From being the washed up point guard to a coach.
To the bench, got more than double the money that Kidd did. Which is, and I get Kidd's beef there. I mean, that's, you know, why. And even though I think Fisher is more suited to be a head coach, probably has a lot less of an ego than Kidd. Kidd's ego shined through this year in New Jersey when he brought in Lawrence Frank to be kind of his bench coach, who, you know, he played for Frank and had a great relationship with Frank, and then basically just shit-canned Frank at the beginning of the season, because the word on the street was it's because he felt like Frank was undermining him, which is totally, like, only Jason Kidd can be the head coach of a team and still run the coach of that team out of town, you know? And but with all that said, I think he's going to a pretty good situation in Milwaukee with Parker, with, you know, Larry Sanders, who's capable of being a good player. But... I mean, it was just surreal to see that come across the bottom of the screen. What are your thoughts, Andy?
On Jason Kidd or on Larry?
The whole thing. Do you think that power play?
Well, what I'll say in his defense, first of all, I agree with you. It was one of the funniest news items I ever saw. Like, I thought maybe it came from, you know, your first instinct is this can't be right. Sports like that just can't be true. And then the thing that makes it make sense is I forgot that he's working for Billy King, one of the worst GMs in history. So I can totally see why you'd want to play for, you know, let's get this idiot out of here and I'll take his job.
Right.
I can't possibly be worse than Billy King, I think, is probably the best defense of Jason Kidd's power play that you can make.
That's a great point, Andy. It's a great point. So, you know, free agency. Today's the first day of free agency in the NBA. And we've had... You know, nothing too crazy has happened yet. As everybody knows, all three Heat guys opted out. Word on the street is LeBron's going to sign for 2 years at the max. Bosch is going to take 5 years for $11 million, and Wade is going to take 4 years for $12 million, which will give them enough room to sign another guy. They're looking at Kyle Lowry now, who I think, I mean, if they actually get Kyle Lowry, I think that they, I mean, that solves a massive problem for them. Their point guard play was freaking pathetic. And he's really, really good. And I think he's the kind of guy who he doesn't need to score. He doesn't, I mean, him being the fourth offensive option, I don't think will bother him at all. And he plays great defense. He's going to, if they get him, it'll make that helter-skelter defense when they turn up the defensive heat, it'll make them, you know, I mean, very, very tough to deal with. With all that said, I mean, you don't know how much more. That assumes that Wade doesn't just completely fall off a cliff, and I think he might. Andy, first off, just talking about the Heat, what do you think of LeBron saying he only wants 2 years? And what do you think of them, of the other guys taking less money when they didn't have to?
I think it's the smart move by LeBron. I mean, he's way underpaid. I think we can all agree on that. That his value to a team is way more than what the max is. And, you know, he took less money than Wade in their first Miami, you know, super team deal to I think that was a move to, you know, kind of assuage Wade's ego.
Right.
And, you know, he's not doing that again. And I think he's right to, because Wade was kind of a disaster in the finals after they spent a whole season, you know, resting him and coddling him so he'd be ready for the playoffs, and then he couldn't even show up. So I think it's the right thing for Bosch and Wade to take less money, and it's time for them to admit that, you know, we're second and third banana here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I agree 100%, Andy, and I think it's the first time LeBron is, since he's been in Miami, I mean, this is a real power play by him, and a real,
yeah,
I'm the alpha dog, Because one, not only, I mean, both of these guys could have made $20 million next year. So
they already had deals signed where they were making $20 million.
So you know that when they got, and they, it was reported that they got together and they talked, and they walked away from that, and they all three opted out. And then LeBron not only says he wants a max contract, but he says he only wants it for 2 years, where these guys are signing for 4 and 5. And that's him telling them that if you guys continue to decline, I want to be able to get the fuck out of here in 2 years while you guys finish your careers on the, you know, at the bottom of the standings. You know, he's taking, you know, and I mean, he's the best player in the world, and he should do that. And I think, you know, that was him saying, if you want me to stay in Miami, here are my terms, take it or leave it. And I think I agree with you that Wade and Bosch did the right thing. I don't, you know, I actually, you know, I have to take my personal feelings about the Heat and put them aside when looking at things objectively. But I give Wade and Bosch credit for restructuring the deals, because not everybody would. I mean, if one of them says, screw you, I'm taking my $20 million, LeBron's not coming back there. And the whole thing falls apart. So I do give them credit for that.
Especially because they've already won.
Yeah, twice.
Right. They already have 2 rings, so why not just keep the money? But.
Absolutely. Jeff, I know you're a big LeBron guy. What do you think?
Would we say that I'm a big LeBron guy? Is that?
I think he was being sarcastic.
Well, you did predict the Heat to win in 7, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I did think that they were capable of winning those last 3 games against the Spurs, but it's not so much that I like LeBron as I hate him, and I thought that maybe he would win in spite of me. Gladly, I was wrong. So you can see that my predictions don't really have anything rooted in...
It's not analysis, it's a...
Except for soccer. My soccer...
That's beyond reproach.
I know what LeBron's deal is, man. Like, if he was going to opt out of his contract, then why stay with Miami? Why not say, you know what, F you, Pat Riley, with your stupid stick around speech? Why not go sign with the Lakers? Why not go sign with the Knicks? Like, what does he want? What does he want out of life?
He can get the most money from Miami.
Yeah, I don't think it's about the money. I mean, the Lakers are the Knicks. The money. And Jeff, that's a good point in that if either one of those teams were in a position to bring him in without just gutting the whole rest of the team, I think
endorsements for NBA players.
Right. But I mean, he wants to win. And I mean, he didn't win with Bosch and Wade this year. I mean, the Knicks aren't going to have the Knicks can't afford to have him and Carmelo Anthony. So, I mean, do you think he wants to go to a team that J.R. Smith is the second best player on the team? Or I mean, the Lakers, if Kobe is Kobe, they could, I believe, get rid of basically everybody else on the team and have LeBron and Kobe. But is that really, I mean, is Kobe, can you tell me Kobe's going to be better than Wade? You don't know that. You know, I think the other teams that could woo him, and I mean, there's still an outside chance he doesn't go back to Miami. It's pretty much a done deal at this point. But Phoenix is a team that has the cap room and has the assets, and Houston in particular. Houston has the room to pair him with Dwight Howard and James Harden, which if I was LeBron, I would think long and hard about. But overall, and plus, I mean, I think he's so image conscious that he knows how poorly things went over with the decision. And he doesn't want to be looked at as like a hired gun. So I can't imagine him leaving Miami. Like, it's basically like the going gets tough and then LeBron leaves town. Like, I don't think that's what he really wants.
Is this really a better look, though? Like, he's really swinging his weight around and kind of saying, you know, I'm the big shit in town here. Everyone's going to do what I say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not any different than what Chris Paul did in the... with the Clippers, where Chris Paul basically said, you either bring Doc Rivers, you figure out a way that Doc Rivers is the coach here, or I'm out of here. Or what Kobe Bryant did is more egregious than what LeBron did, taking all that money and completely hamstringing his team when he's not worth it anymore. You know? So, I mean, I have no problem with what he did. As long as, I mean, you know, he's not gutting his home city that's already in the shitter on national TV this time, you know. So, all right. So, moving on. So chances are LeBron's heading back to Miami. I want to touch on Carmelo Anthony real quick because he's really the prize in free agency. Who's, you know, I think it's pretty. I don't think he's going back to New York. So the stuff Phil Jackson said, I don't necessarily think Phil Jackson wants him back in New York. Unless it's at the right price, and it's not going to be at the right price.
Yeah, right.
So Andy, I'd like to get your thoughts. Where do you think the most desirable destination for him is? I mean, I think it's personally think it's pretty clear, but I want to hear your opinion first.
Well, this is kind of off the top of my head, but I think, you know, the most attractive destinations are Chicago and Houston. And I'm debating in my head. I think I'd go with Chicago. Not so much because, you know, everybody would love to play with Derrick Rose from 2 years ago, but who knows when and if that guy's ever coming back. But Chicago had a very competitive, defensive-minded team last year that just had so much trouble scoring. And I think if you add Carmelo into that, you can kind of hide him on defense. You know, he's probably not a bad team defender if you get him engaged. You know, it's not like he doesn't have the physical. That's not his focus, you know. His focus is scoring. So I think that could be interesting, him in Chicago. And then if Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose again next year, then that's a pretty awesome team. So I'll go with Chicago.
Yep, that's my thought too, Andy. I mean, all the reasons you said. Tom Thibodeau, I think, is a big reason. I think Thibodeau right there with Popovich, I think, is the best coach. Those are the two best coaches in the NBA. If you look at
the opposite of Popovich, though, he plays his guys super hard in the regular season, and then it doesn't pay off that much in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, I think you're giving him a bit of a raw deal there. I mean, I think it didn't pan off playoff in the playoffs because they don't have any players because everybody got hurt. I mean, the fact not this year, but the previous year, when they actually won a series in the playoffs with that roster, with Nate Robinson literally the best guy on the floor, and then took game one against Miami, that was the best coaching job I've seen in a long time. So I think that Thibodeau has that kind of respect around the league, and I think Carmelo is going to be able to choose between those two teams. And does he want to go to a team that already has James Harden, who is very much like a Carmelo?
That's redundant.
I mean, they play different positions, but Harden is a guy who needs the ball. Harden's a guy who shoots a lot. He's a volume scorer
and has no interest in playing defense.
Really no interest in playing defense. But I think, like Keith said, I think it's a redundant thing for them on offense. I don't think he fits that well there. But in Chicago, I mean, Noah defensively is unreal, right? I mean, he's a great, great player. They can work it where if they amnesty Carlos Boozer, who I despise Carlos Boozer, by the way, I always have just a, you know, just a shrink from the moment bum, in my opinion. But if they amnesty him, they should be able to keep Taj Gibson. So you're gonna go out there with Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, who is gonna be awesome off the bench for them. I mean, because if they have Carmelo Anthony, McDermott's gonna get all sorts of open shots. Jimmy Butler is a stud. Again, though, scoring challenge. But the guy can play 47 minutes a game, and I mean, he fills up the box score. Carmelo fits in so well there, and he has to see that. And like you said, Andy, even if Derrick Rose comes back at 80% of what he was, then even if the Heat sign Lowry, if this team can stay healthy, which is a big concern for the Bulls, of course, with Noah and Rose's injury histories, but if they can stay healthy, I would favor them to beat the Heat with the Big Three and Kyle Lowry. I think that they would stifle them on defense. I mean, San Antonio stifled him on defense a bit, and the guy, and you know, Kawhi Leonard really bothered James. I mean, Taj Gibson is a hell of a defensive player, and to throw him and Jimmy Butler at James the whole game, you got kind of the inside out thing. I think it would drive him up a wall. But yeah, so that's my take there. And any other free agents? I mean, those are the big ones. Andy, anything else that's really interesting you?
We talked a bit about Lowry. I think it'd be an interesting fit in Miami.
The question I have with that is, didn't they just draft Napier?
Yeah, they don't. I mean, that's a backup plan. He'll start if they don't get Lowry, but if not, I mean, you can't. You know, neither one of those guys that they have are even backup point guard worthy. They were historically bad in the finals. I mean, they were both god awful, and I mean, so I think they're both. You know, maybe Cole stays around, but I think they're what Miami's thinking is bring in Lowry and have Napier back him up.
I mean, that's a good situation for Napier, right? Yeah. Playing against other teams' second lineup.
It's about as good as it gets. It's going to be real interesting. I mean, I think we'll have more to say on this next week as things shake out. It'll shock me if Anthony doesn't end up on the Bulls. Toronto keeps saying they want to keep Lowry, and I mean, if they do, that really puts Miami in a pickle about what they're going to do, who they're going to get to go along with the big three. It's like they're in a weird position, even though they've made three finals or four finals in a row, in that, you know, they got their asses kicked so bad that the team just doesn't look good enough to win the way it's currently constructed. Like, they have to bring in another guy. And if it's not him, it's, you know, I think it's a bit touch and go. But we'll see. So, you know, that I think that's going to do it tonight for the Sports Lounge. This has been a great episode. We've really kicked back on the couch in this one, boys, and you know, just gotten the lounge banter going. I mean, my lungs are going to be shit tomorrow after all these cigars, and definitely spent a couple more dollars than I wanted to. But we'll be back next week, of course. So I'd like to thank Andy, Jeff in particular. Yeah, we love your takes, Jeff. You're the crazy guy in the corner sometimes.
Oh, hey, you know what? The pleasure's all mine. I'd just like to say quickly, Carmelo to the Mavericks. Continue.
Oh, that's interesting.
Even though Cuban said he wouldn't give anybody a max deal?
Yeah, he's a lying scumbag.
And I mean, I can't think of a better way for Jeff's time on this episode to close. That was a great take, Jeff. We love it. And Keith Schmidt, as always, your baseball expertise, second to none. So great to be here, guys, and can't wait for next week. So please be sure to tune in to the Sports Lounge, people.
Heading out west,
baby. Take it slow. Love me, sexy, love me, sexy.